Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back, and thank you for catching another edition of The Drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
Great to be here.
Great to have you back. Derek.
Glad to be here.
One way or the other. Thank you, Derek, for coming in again on another Saturday. Beautiful Saturday when you should be out playing basketball or something. Let's take care of some business. We've got a lot to get through today. Our sponsor this half hour, Discount Tire. Right now, in the Current, you can see the advertisement from Discount Tire, and they've got $100 back with the purchase of four select Kumho tires, which are pretty nice tires. You can also get $80, save up to $80 when you buy a select set of four Goodyear, Dunlop, or Hankook tires. And again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but Hankook tires are pretty nice. You see them on a lot of those expensive rides out there. You can call the Brighton branch. Now, I bought my tires there this last time, and with this winter, we've talked about it. I lost two tires to potholes this year, and thank goodness the guys sold me the road warranty. I was like, I don't really want it. Well, they said, man, you really should buy them. It's not that much. Glad I did, because my tires were like $125 a piece. Walked in, they replaced both of them for $30 because of the insurance. So it was a bonus. So thanks to the guys there at Discount Tire for doing that for me. You can call them 810-225-2798. That number again, 810-225-2798. Or you can go to discounttire.com if you don't want to go all the way to Brighton. They've got stores everywhere. You can
right down the road.
Absolutely. So tons of stores around Discount Tire with two T's .com. Okay. So the one thing I wanted to talk about to start out with, and you and I have had this conversation, Drake. Spending in education.
We need to spend more. There's a consensus.
Yeah. You would think. And in this election cycle with Mark Schauer, the Democrat saying, we've cut back on spending, which is a wholesale lie. He keeps spouting it, but he's completely wrong. The Republicans have gone and kind of fell for that and said, we're going to go ahead and spend more anyways. And they have. And Michigan CapCon had a great article this week from Jack Spencer and Jarrett Skorup. And Jarrett's been on the show before. So Michigan CapCon, Jarrett, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, guys. I'm doing very well.
So your great article this week, states spending less money on K-12 education are getting better results than those who spend more. Sounds kind of crazy.
Right. It maybe sounds a little bit strange, especially with the debate, as you mentioned, the discussion we're having here in Michigan. But really, this is a near consensus among people who look at this. There's a lot of people and a lot of economists around the country, and I linked to several of the main studies on this. And it's pretty simple. There's one particular national test called the NAEP test that everybody takes, that every state takes here in the nation. And if you track that those test scores along with how much states spend, it's all over the map. It doesn't have anything to do with it. Now, this isn't to say that if you spend $5 per kid or something that you're going to get better results. But what it's telling you right now is that among what we're spending in this nation, which goes between about $6,000 per pupil in some states, that's the low end, or Utah spends about $7,000 per pupil, all the way up to D.C., which spends almost $30,000 per pupil.
Right.
The average in the nation is about $12,000. What it tells you is in that range, it doesn't. No matter how much you spend, you're not getting better results.
Right. Yeah, you're breaking up a bit on me, Jared. So what the thing that I found interesting was Michigan, which ranked 22nd nationally with a per pupil spending of $12,600, was near the bottom of the pack when it came to scores, 39th out of the 51 if you include the District of Columbia, right?
Yeah, correct. The specific article we were doing was looking at the improvement in the last couple of years on these national tests that we have. And the interesting thing is that some of the states that spend much lower than Michigan, which we point out, Tennessee, Indiana, and Florida, And those are some of the lower spending states in the nation, and those are the most improved. So clearly, they're doing something else better. They're using the money that they have better than Michigan is. They're using the money better than states like New York are, states like Washington, D.C. So those are doing very well. And so there doesn't seem to be a correlation between spending and results.
Yeah. Okay. And so that the test that you're talking about is the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP, as you called it. And, yeah, it is pretty – it measures what we've been saying. I mean, we've been saying this for 2.5 years that we've been doing the show here, that money is not always the answer to better schooling. I mean, if you've had – you know, this Michigan, they actually went down, even though we're spending more money by 0.4%, right? Or is that just the score, the 0.4?
Well, it's looking at, that's over the last 6 years. So not okay. Just this most recent year, but the last couple of years. Yeah, Michigan has not done as well. But the greater point for people to think of is, listen, Utah and Idaho are the two lowest spending states. They perform pretty well on those NAEP tests. They do well in terms of improvement. They do well overall. Now, there's other factors in there that might cause that, but even when you hold for socioeconomic background, there's no evidence that spending more is leading to greater results. So, this is just kind of interesting in Michigan because, of course, we're having this debate over whether Governor Snyder spent more in the legislature and how much more they're having. That's fine. I mean, we've done a lot of articles on that. We want to correct the record on what a certain gubernatorial candidate has been saying. But at the same time, realize that just spending more money is not turning out better results. You've got to spend it smarter. You've got to spend it on better things.
I'm going to make a guess here that Utah and what was the other state?
Idaho.
Idaho don't spend, say, an average of $100,000 a year for salary and benefits in those states like we do here in Michigan.
That's correct. They don't, and that's the other point. So Utah spends about $7,200 per pupil. Michigan's spending $12,000 per pupil. Now, the other point on that that's kind of interesting is also that just Michigan, how much the spending has skyrocketed. I mean, in 1970, we were spending about $7,000 per pupil. So we're on track with what Utah was spending right now. We're up to $12,000. That's adjusted for inflation. That's in real dollars. So we've had a huge increase, and it's hard to say looking out there saying that we're educating our students a lot better than we have in decades past.
Right.
I mean, I look at the Saline High School that was built, I'm going to guess, 10 years ago, maybe not even that long ago, and it looks like a college campus there. It's, you know, the infrastructure spending is just humongous.
Yeah, well, better better buildings don't mean to better scores and better education for students either.
Right.
I will say I did another article recently where we pulled out the 10 highest paying districts, so the ones in the states that pay the most, and then I tracked those with the state test scores. But what we did is we have a study where you hold those state test scores for socioeconomic background. So, you know, this isn't just saying that we expect a kid in the city of Detroit to do as well as a kid whose parents are both college professors, you know, at Ann Arbor Public Schools. This is holding for that background. And still, it's all over the map. The spending doesn't seem to matter. Saline actually does score pretty well on that, even taking into account their background. But a lot of the other scores, schools, exactly what you said, they're putting up, they're spending a lot of money in all kinds of different areas. And not only that, but we started ramping up that spending, you know, a decade, 2 decades ago. And now, especially in terms of our pension system, where we're not funding that correctly, well, that's all coming back. That's coming back to bite us.
Yeah, when I gave Saline as an example, and I wasn't trying to imply that their test scores would be mediocre or low. It's just that I'm not convinced that you have to spend all this money on these buildings and to get high test scores.
Right.
You know, I just see this the spending, and they always want more, and there's always a millage proposal to pay for this and that, and they're always agitating for more money when you look at what they've already spent, which I think is over the top and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, the question to always ask, I always put to people when I'm debating this issue, whether it's a union person or administrator, is how much money do you need? because there's never an answer for that. I mean, the answer is more, like you said at the beginning of this program, but and that kind of sounds like we're joking around, but actually we've done a couple articles where we've looked at what the MEA press releases, the union press releases, and the administration groups, and you can go back 20 years, and every time the budget comes up, it's, we need more. It's they're harming our kids, they're taking money from our kids. And if you had talked to administrators back in 1970 and said, hey, what do you think about spending double what we're spending now? Will that be enough? They'd all say yes, of course, and yet here we are today still saying, we need more money. We need more money. And I'm saying, let's look at the results. Let's look at the other states, what they spend. Let's look at charter schools, which are spending $1,000 less per pupil, who are scoring very well. There's a study from Stanford that came out beginning of last year. They're doing much better with the money that they have. So let's look at some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the thing, too, I'll just say one more thing, is when they always say they want more, which is absolutely true, like you said, what galls me is they're so unapologetic about it, too. They just act like it's this entitlement. It's a God-given right. It's a demand that you should not even question, because you are harming, quote, the children, unless you just totally cave or enthusiastically want to give more.
Yeah, that's right. And education is something that, it's, as we're seeing now for politicians, it's very tough to tighten up that funding, because you can make the argument, well, you're trying to harm kids, you're trying to harm teachers, and everybody loves teachers and everybody loves kids, but it makes it a very hard debate. And what's happened in Michigan over the last 20 years is we went from a relatively wealthy state to one that's pretty poor. And yet, so if you take that chart of what we're spending, that over $12,000 per kid, well, if you adjust that for the income of the states, Michigan's spending one of the most, at one point we were spending the second highest in the nation, adjusted for income. So we're spending a ton of money on education compared to other states. And you have to ask yourself, are we getting those results from that amount of spending?
Yeah, obviously we're not. Well, it's a great article, Jarrett. We appreciate, again, all the work that you guys do, and give our regards to Jack as well for helping you get this article. It was very informative. And we'll have you on again.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I don't know if there was any noise in the background, sir. I'm watching. I got a 20-month-old son. My wife's working today. I think the union planted him in here, so he's been trying to get me off the phone. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Jerry. Appreciate you taking the time.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Derek, we'll go into a break, and when we come back, we'll push on with our agenda. See you on the other side.
To succeed in today's business environment, your business needs to be seen by as many customers as possible. The Current newspaper serves Washtenaw, Oakland, and Livingston counties. Advertising in The Current is the best way to get your money's worth out of your print media budget. The Current has grown 600% since 2007 because The Current has a unique venue for local content, common sense, and your business message. Getting your business message into thousands of homes utilizing The Current newspaper for mere pennies apiece is the best way to do that. And your ad is also seen online for free. Call Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current, at 734-629-6010. That's 734-629-6010. Or go to currentonline.com. That's CourantOnline.com. Grow your business in print and online with The Current newspaper.
So yesterday, I was in the park, and I just happened to run into this guy named Mike, who served in Iraq. I served in Vietnam as a Marine. Then he asked,
so I've been feeling down, having a hard time. Now, does it get any better?
It will get better. Paralyzed Veterans of America will help you. They helped me get my health care and VA benefits and rebuild my life.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, changing lives, building futures. To learn more, visit pva.org.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck for Dave 2037 so he can buy anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. What are you getting Steve 2037?
Steve 2037 will be just fine.
Okay, but don't expect to borrow my anti-gravity boots.
Save something for the future. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
This is Alex Jones coming to you from the front lines of the InfoWars battlefield. I hope you will join me in supporting Dr. Dave Janda by listening to Operation Freedom every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. on Wham Talk 1600. Dave's show is about your financial, economic, political, and healthcare freedom. He dissects the global elite scum and educates you on how to win the InfoWar. Tune in every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. for Dr. Dave's Operation Freedom.
She's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. But she always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady.
I always liked Tom Jones as a kid.
Okay, there you go. So, great tune. That's my mom's favorite tune.
Do you remember?
One of them. She loved Tom Jones. That's why we were playing it for you. So my dad and my mom have a great marriage, many years now, and I wanted to play that for them. So, well, good tune, Derek. Thank you for pulling that up.
To them.
Yeah.
Hey, do you remember the Tom Jones show or variety show when you were a kid?
Yes. That's what I was saying. My mom would, you know, hey, that's the only time I ever saw her in the evenings, put stuff aside.
Oh, okay.
Tom Jones came on. Mom would watch Tom Jones.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you were just talking about a song would come on or you're actually referring to a television show.
No, it was that show. I remember that just like you. We're the same age. So I remember that coming on and mom would, you know, I'm like, who's this dude? Why would mom like to watch this guy? You know, but.
Back in the day when we were kids, variety shows were a huge part of television genre.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sonny and Cher.
Yeah, it was the classic lie on the floor. Mom and Dad would be in the chairs, and we'd watch Donnie Murray. And I think Andy Williams had some at
one point. Glenn Campbell.
Yes. Yeah. So those are fun. Mm-hmm. It was Americana, man. At
exactly.
At its best.
Carol Burnett show.
The best, Jerry. The best.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. I miss those days.
All right. So I wanted to move on. There's a lot to cover today, but the next one was this week, Obama's new climate report came out. And doom and gloom, everything's happening, the sky is falling. And Derek, we got track one. This guy explains it pretty well. This came out, and this is what this stands for, according to what Obama wants you to think, anyways.
That's why I invest in carbon credits.
Congressionally mandated report comes out every 5 years or so. And this one, it's 5 years in the making. It's 840 pages, and it's to say, what is climate change doing to America? Other reports look globally. This is looking specifically at the United States and drills down into regions, eight different regions in the United States. And essentially it's saying it's here, it's changing America, you know, thinking of America the Beautiful sort of becoming America the Stormy, the Sneezy, and the Dangerous. One of the ways this report talks about most affecting our daily lives is in the extreme weather, the heat waves, the storms, the droughts, the downpours. The Obama administration is using this to say, okay, we're going to act on climate change, but many of the actions require congressional approval, and that's not getting anywhere so far. The other thing is they're saying local governments, state governments, and even the federal government should use this report to say, okay, how are we going to adapt to what's coming?
Okay, so.
You know, my first thought on that is, we can't even repair the bridges in this country, and we're going to repair the weather?
Exactly. I mean, like, we've never had droughts. We've never had heavy rains. We've never had storms and tornadoes, ever. It's all in the last, since the 70s, since we polluted and the Indian cried. We've polluted our environment so bad, it's wholesale raining cats and dogs. Really?
Hey, if we didn't have bad weather, we would have never had the Wizard of Oz.
This Chicken Little stuff, it just astounds me that this can come. And doesn't he feel embarrassed? Does the man have no shame at all for putting out this stuff and saying, the sky is falling, we have to do this, and if Congress won't do it, I'm going to do my own executive orders, which is where this leads to. They're trying to repaint this report as being a disaster already here.
He has less shame than a teacher asking for more money.
Oh, there we go. I knew that had to be coming. I mean, come on. They're saying summers are longer and hotter, and extended periods of unusual heat last longer than any living American has experienced. Really? Was this the longest summer? Did we even have a summer last year?
It was very cool, if I remember.
When went from global cool, remember? It was supposed to be the Ice Age coming back in the 70s. Then it was global warming. And now I'm just waiting for them to say the new Ice Age is coming again. I mean, this is a scam. It's a total scam.
Hey, in 2009, I had my 30th high school reunion, and we all gathered in Saline, and it was like, this was in the middle of June, and we were freezing. I think it was about 53 degrees outside and kind of rainy, and a lot of the people that, you know, moved out of state, some drove up from Texas and Tennessee. Well, they're down in their state, and it's fairly warm, and they're thinking, you know, and they came up here in t-shirts, and they were freezing. I mean, I was freezing. So 2009, what was that? You know,
5 years ago.
5 years ago, we were freezing to death in the summer.
Yeah.
So, but you know what they say though? That's also due to climate change.
Yeah. It's weather. It's not climate change when you're talking this. Climate change happens over thousands of years, and for them to say that this is happening so quickly, come on. It's total bunk. Luckily, there are some dissenting scientists who are labeling the latest White House climate report as pseudoscience. Patrick Michaels and Paul Knappenberger of the Libertarian Cato Institute submitted these comments after seeing the Obama administration's report. In it, they're saying the NCA, the report, relies not only on peer-reviewed scientific literature, but also on non-peer-reviewed work from environmentalist activist groups, which the government didn't even say was in part of the report. Knappenberger, they did a 75-page, and I'm going to get the links for it and get it on the web this week. But again, they're talking doom and gloom. You know, if the seas are going to rise 2-3 feet in the next couple of years, why did Al Gore buy a beach house? Seriously? I mean, it's just
to entertain his ladies.
Well, it's more of the scare tactics, because here's what it is. Obama announces new energy efficiency and renewable energy measures, which in the end, additionally, the Energy Department will work with community colleges to expand solar energy training programs, aiming to send 50,000 people into the solar industry workforce by 2020. How many solar companies have gone belly up in the last 4 years?
All of them.
Where are these 50,000 people that we're going to spend money training on going to go to work?
China.
Exactly. It's ridiculous that, you know, we're going to have more cylinders. We're going to have more of the Tesla automobiles and these electric car companies that are going out of business. It's more corporate cronyism. This is the excuse that they're using for him to put regulations into place to force more money into his friends' pockets, the corporate cronyism that's going on rampantly. It's not just under Obama. It was under all the presidents. But this guy in particular shows no shame in doing what he's doing. Yes?
Agreed.
You're nodding fervently.
Correctamundo.
So enough of that. I've got a lot to move on to. I could beat that dead horse like Obama's beating the dead horse for all day on that one. But There we go. What perfect timing.
Yeah, we got a lot of material to cover.
Yes, and we're going to have to go through it rapidly.
I know. I'm trying to keep my big mouth shut for once.
You got to get that good quip in.
Except for my barbs, yeah.
All right, we'll see you on the other side of the break.
On the move, driving to work, getting the groceries, hauling the kids to soccer. How do they keep up to date? They listen to Wham Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham for intelligent conversation with hosts like Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Theron X. They stay tuned in for Fox updates, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business on Wham Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Arkansas issuing its first gay marriage licenses after a ban was overturned yesterday.
People may be slower to come around in Arkansas, but I see it happening.
Gay rights proponent Eric McDaniel, the state constitution amended 10 years ago.
When voters by a 3-1 margin approved the ban, the president of the family council says the ruling is another example of a judge's personal preference replacing the will of the people.
Fox News Radio's Ron Flatter. A massive effort underway to try and rescue scores of Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped by Islamists.
They are flying fairly constant sorties over the skies of the Sambisa forest. They've already done 250, I'm told. They've got a signals unit on the ground. They've got a large contingent of police. There's a multinational task force.
Alex Crawford with Fox Sister Network Sky News. Fox News, we report, you decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Child in a Strange Country, Helen Keller and the History of Education for People Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired is a new traveling exhibit from the Museum of the American Printing House for the Blind, exploring the human ingenuity expressed by generations of teachers and students. It'll be on display at the Ann Arbor District Library's Downtown Library, which is the location for the Washtenaw Library for the Blind and Physically Disabled. It'll be from Friday, May 2nd through Wednesday, June 25th. There'll be an opening reception for the public at the Downtown Library on Friday, May 2nd from 7 to 8 p.m. There'll also be related events throughout May and June at the Downtown Library. For more information on the exhibit or for related events, visit aadl.org/events or call 734-327-4555. Wigs for Kids provides custom fit, age-appropriate wigs at no cost to Michigan children who are experiencing hair loss as a result of cancer treatment and other medical conditions. To learn more about how your contribution can make a difference in the life of a Michigan child, please call Wigs for Kids at 586-772-6656 or visit www.wigsforkids.org. That's Wigs, the number 4, kids.org. Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley helps local low-income families obtain the dream of homeownership for themselves and their families. To learn more, call 734-677-1558 or visit www.h4h.org. That's H, the number 4, H.org.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. Wham! Talk 1600.
Join us every Sunday morning for Wham! Weekend Worship. At 9 a.m., it's the Lutheran Hour Radio Show, followed at 9:30 by the Christian Science Sentinel Program. At 10, we join Bethlehem United Church of Christ. And finally, from 11 a.m. till noon, it's the First Presbyterian Church of Ann Arbor. Every Sunday morning, Wham! Offers an opportunity for you to worship wherever you are. And please visit whamradio.com and click on any of the church programs to visit their websites and to find out more about their live services.
Bottles of Dr. Blue. GMC's Transcend Beef. We hear it from the people.
Oh, we're having a good old time down here.
Well, there you go. It's the variety show going on down here. You could have seen Ed and Linda dancing in the hallway to that one.
Ed Hoffman was doing the whole hip-hop urban ghetto scene there. It was great.
Tony Orlando could not have done it better than what Ed just did.
And Don.
Yes. Yes. We got to take a call from John from Farmington Hills, wants to talk about climate change before we move on. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good,
on
good.
Global warming. Obama wants to do this so that he can kill the industries, and that's going to make people out of jobs and dependent on the government to get a one-party system going. If you just look from the time you guys DJ and you go back and review everything, you can see they're pulling out every stop possible to make this happen. And they just did a big hurt on the, you know, Tea Party, where we needed to have a lot of primaries, and they're allowing all that money to be spent by the corporatists, and people aren't communicating well enough, and you guys are trying to get the word out, but I'll tell you, we've got to do a firmer job on getting the word out. Because look what they've done, and look where they're going, and it's going to be a disaster if we don't get them to stop.
Yeah, well, we can use the internet to our advantage, John, and you're dead right. People need to get on their Facebook and start. I know a lot of people don't want to deal with politics, but you have to. I would rather be somewhere else. Maybe not. I would rather be out enjoying the sunshine than sitting in a studio and talking politics. There are more pleasant things, I think, to do, but we do this every Saturday because, you know what, we're doing our part. You know, this is how Drake and I do it. That's how Derek does it. We do our part. I go on Facebook and do the same thing, and I'm sure people get tired of my posts. But you know what? Nobody's ever going to say it's my fault. I mean, someone asked me the other day, isn't it time to take the Romney Ryan sticker off your car, Gary? I said, no, for me it's not because I'm not to blame. It's the way I look at it. So you're dead on, John. We need to do more. In the end, it's the votes. The corporations can spend what they want, but it's we the people who vote. And if we live by the television commercials that they're putting out instead of doing our own homework, shame on us. Thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it.
God bless.
Thanks.
So, absolutely right. It's up to each and every one of us to do what we do. And I know you and I work at WHAM for that reason. It's not like we're here to make money or anything.
And we're not. Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. All right. Well, let's move on. We got a lot to cover. Let's talk a little bit about the Benghazi Select Committee.
Linda's not happy with those comments. He's like, poor baby.
Let's move on to the Benghazi Select Committee. And, of course, they're finally doing it. Glad they're doing it. I think it's well and long overdue. But let's start with Congressman Tom Cotton had something to say about all the naysayers in Congress, all the Democrats with their feigned outrage over why are we going over this yet again. Play that track, Derek.
Affairs Committee. The gentleman from Arkansas is recognized for 2 minutes.
Mr. Speaker, a couple lessons I learned in the Army were you move to the sound of gunfire. And the most important step in the troop leading procedures is to supervise the execution of your orders. When Americans were fighting for their lives in Benghazi, Barack Obama did neither. He sent no quick reaction force, and he didn't even stay in the Situation Room to supervise the execution of his orders. We expect more from lieutenants in the Army than our president gave us that night. For 2 years, he's covered up this failure of leadership by stonewalling. Not anymore. We will now get to the truth. But what do our colleagues on the other side of the aisle say to this? They express great outrage at politicizing this matter. When I was leading troops in Iraq in 2006, men and women who were being shot at and blown up by Al-Qaeda, where was the outrage as they fundraised endlessly off the Iraq war? Where was the outrage as they viciously attacked our commanders? Where was the outrage when they said that soldiers were war criminals? Where was the outrage when they said the war was lost? Where was the outrage when they said that only high school dropouts joined the Army? Forgive me if I don't join my Democratic colleagues in sharing in their fake outrage. 4 Americans lost their lives that night in Benghazi. They deserve justice. The American people deserve the truth. One other lesson I learned in the Army is we leave no man behind. A and we will not leave these four men behind.
Gentlelady from New York.
Okay. Doesn't get any simpler than that. We don't have the truth yet.
Yeah,
maybe there's some conservative Republican at fault in this. I don't know. If there is, I want him outed as well as anyone else.
The question, why are we yet addressing this again, is because it hasn't been properly addressed in the first place.
Yeah, 18 months later, we still don't have the answers. The dog and pony show. I mean, why now did this email, the smoking gun email, comes out now after 18 months? You didn't think that was a relevant email 18 months ago?
Well, some of the answers that we do have are damning. One being that a large part of that security force there were indigenous Libyans that you couldn't trust as far as you could throw them, and maybe some of the ones you could trust were unarmed because we didn't want to offend the Libyan people or the so-called government.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to go over when this. You know, for me, it comes down to if you made mistakes, be honest about it, you screwed up. But don't try to cover it up like you obviously did. Now, one of the things that I think has made this take so long to get out in the open is the media hasn't worked it. I mean, you've got Fox News covering it. You got us and talk radio covering it. We've been pushing. We've been talking about this nonstop for 18 months. I'm sure there are times people said, I'm not going to listen to Drake and Gary anymore because all they talk about is Benghazi.
And we know that a large part of the reason the media doesn't cover it as they should is the obvious, I'm not going to say it, but also because they want to help push Hillary Clinton
and the
as their next president.
Well, maybe there's going to be a change, though, because it looks like the story is starting to get some traction. Now, Joe Scarborough, which is MSNBC's alleged conservative show host, actually said this to one of his other co-host from MSNBC, Alex Wagner. You got that next track, Derek?
The fourth one, I think, is open to interpretation. There's a lot of litigation that will continue about that. But for this to launch
where's the ambiguity? First of all, the launch 1,000 ships, when you have something that goes to the heart of the matter that the White House holds back.
But is it the heart of the matter? I mean,
yeah, when they say Susan Rice, don't talk about Barack Obama's policy. Make this about
policy. Talk about
a videotape. Of course, you know this goes to the heart. Don't insult our intelligence on this. When they're telling Susan Rice to talk about a videotape, you're saying that doesn't go to the heart of the matter?
Pretty amazing, coming off of MSNBC, right?
And that's the diversionary story they came up with was this videotape. You know, you couldn't come up with anything better than that.
It's amazing to me that
the only people that are stupid enough to fall for that videotape are the people in the Islamic world, like Pakistan. And, you know, after they hear this kind of stuff, they riot and attack the U.S. embassy and smash McDonald's. Those are the only people stupid enough to really fall for a story like that.
Well,
because they want to.
Obviously, Obama thought the United States. And you know what? Our media did fall for it.
Well, that's true.
At least for a number of days.
But I think that most of the American people have not fallen for it like others that I just mentioned would.
Yeah. Well, this, you've probably heard, maybe you haven't, the smoking gun email. This was from Ben Rhodes, the infamous Ben Rhodes, and it was sent to a number of people, including David Plouffe, Dan Pfeiffer, Jay Carney. Let's see if there's any other names. A Ledbetter, a Select. But there was another name, Metki K. Al-Hassani. Now, this guy is allegedly connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. And yet he works in the White House. You want to talk about something odd? And again, nobody's really talked about this in the mainstream media. And that's why I pulled it up today. I'm like, you know what? It strikes me as odd that this guy would be on this email. It strikes me as odd that he actually works in the White House, but that's me.
You know, it's very concerning, yet not totally surprising.
Yeah. This guy is the special assistant to the Office of the Chief of Staff, National Security Council, and the Executive Office of the President. The fact that anyone would even allegedly have ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, be involved that close to the inner circle of the United States President, is incredibly troublesome to me.
Right, because of the access to information. I mean, hasn't this guy, what kind of a vetting process goes on here? Do we subcontract that out just like we do with Edward Snowden?
It is strange because this guy was the president of the Muslim Student Association, which is an alleged Muslim Brotherhood front organization.
I know
Wouldn't
what happened.
Wouldn't that be enough to disqualify you from service?
No. That
he
means
might be a nice guy.
That means you can't look at it in depth because then you'd be accused of profiling and being a racist.
So they didn't even bother vetting
and
him because we can't profile.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. So don't touch that one. Could end your career.
All right. Well, as crazy as that is, we're going to get a little crazier, and we're going to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood and Benghazi truths being hidden by a talk radio congressman. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers knows something big about Benghazi, and he's not telling. One thing he's not conceding is that the attackers reside firmly under the Muslim Brotherhood umbrella. Now, why wouldn't you say that? It's odd to me that, and you and I talked about this when Mike Rogers said he was not going to run again. With all that's happening, all of a sudden now he's gone. So we're going deep in the weeds. Conspiracy or not, you be the judge. But I put this
Bilderbergers! Poison pills! Suicide pills! Pharmaceutical companies! Bankers!
I put this on the Daily Drift today, and you can read this report. It's by Ben Barak. Who works with, you'll find it at a website called Shabbat.com. And it's Waleed Shabbat, who was a terrorist years ago and is now a pro-Western, anti-Muslim guy who's advocating for people like us in the United States to be more aware of what Muslims and extreme terrorism is doing to our country. And he loves this country now and wants us to be aware of what's going on. Obviously, our government does not. Otherwise, we wouldn't be hiring people like this into the inner circle. And this goes back to Michelle Bachmann when she made the statements that why are we having Muslim Brotherhood influence inside the inner circle of the president? Mike Rogers was one of those Republicans who said, yeah, pay no attention to the people behind the curtain there.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. So in this article, they list off, I think, six or seven items. And again, I liked Mike Rogers. I'd say 80% of what he has done as a congressman, I'm happy with. Some things I probably would never be happy with, but that's fine. He's done a fairly good job. But in this one, it seems a little odd to me. In the summer of 2012, the Bachmann thing, four other congressmen raised extremely legitimate questions about the Muslim Brotherhood. But Rogers disavowed Bachmann, as we just said. Item number two, Ambassador Chris Stevens met with the House Intelligence Committee in the days before he was murdered. Chris Stevens met, Rogers was forced to concede this fact. Why was he forced to concede it? He didn't just out with it. When asked on live television by Megyn Kelly. And to this point, Rogers has revealed no information about what was said in that meeting. Wouldn't that be relevant? Anything that Ambassador Chris Stevens, who has now been murdered 18 months back, if he had a meeting with the House Intelligence Committee, I'd like to know what was said there.
Right.
I think that's relevant information. Why isn't anybody in the White House press corps asking that? You know, what was said? Why aren't they asking him about it? Again, it just seems a little strange. Number three, in January of 2013, Senator Rand Paul asked Secretary Hillary Clinton about the Benghazi annex being used as a place to ship weapons from Syria through Turkey, to Syria through Turkey. Clinton pleaded ignorance, but the passage of time and the explosive reports from the likes of Seymour Hersh, who works for Shabbat.com, Paul's concerns have now all been vindicated. But despite this, Rogers suggested that Paul's concerns were inaccurate, saying we've looked at it and I can find no information that substantiates that. Really? Why would you not call that information that needs to be further investigated? As early as March of last year, Rogers opposed a select committee on Benghazi.
Yeah, that's very telling.
Very odd. Why would you not want that? Why, if it's your job to investigate, why wouldn't you want the strongest means available to you to do that? In November of last year, after a closed session with witnesses to the Benghazi attack, Rogers' account of that meeting didn't just help support the Obama administration's narrative, but was directly at odds with the account of another committee member, Representative David Nunes. As Nunes said there was no lull in the fighting, Rogers says there was, which is what the Obama administration says. A gross conflict of interest involving Rogers and former CIA Deputy Director Mike Morrell was revealed by Catherine Herridge of Fox News. days prior to Rogers' announcement that he was going to resign. Again, kind of odd. At issue was the House Intelligence Committee's majority staff director and lead Benghazi investigator, J. Michael Alling, accepting a job with Morrell and Hillary Clinton loyalists at a time when the investigation should still have been going full swing. Rogers has given a visibly uninspired performance as chairman during the testimony of Morrell last month. Yeah, you haven't really seen him on any of the talk shows, so he's obviously not. It could be that he's just quit. He's given up. I can understand that. He's winding down, trying to let things go. In the days following Morrell's testimony, Rogers again asserted that he still didn't believe a select committee should be formed in light of how little it would cost relative to what the government actually expends. He's saying it's not worth the effort. Rogers interviewed with the New York Times just a few days back about his upcoming career as a talk radio host, and the New York Times published it one day after Boehner tapped former prosecutor Trey Gowdy to head the select committee. By all indications, Rogers is going to try to brand himself as a moderate voice on radio, not a hardcore conservative. And they're saying in this article that probably the worst thing that could have happened to Mike Rogers is that Louis Gutierrez, a Democrat, said that Rogers, according to the New York Times, is going to be a voice for moderation and consensus building. I don't know if I want Louis Gutierrez endorsing me for anything, especially as a radio host on talk radio. So nothing major there, but it's enough to make you ask a question. And you know me, I love a good conspiracy as well as anybody. And it seemed odd to us at the time when Mike decided not to run.
Yeah, it sounds like a lack of full disclosure, if you will.
Yeah, I would say.
Transparency isn't exactly happening.
Maybe we'll get his transparency when he gets. Maybe he's saving all the good stuff for radio.
Yeah, he's doing his show prep at the expense of the country. The thing is, it makes when you hear all that, it makes you feel like, why does all of this have to be so difficult and frustrating? Just put it on the table and let those in charge and the American people decide. Yeah. Right? Everything has to be such a cat and mouse game.
Look, it is
propaganda.
Really simple.
Yeah.
It is really simple. If you are not hiding anything, make everything available. I don't care if it's the IRS scandal. I don't care if it's the Benghazi scandal. I don't care if it's Fast and Furious. Put it all on the table. If you have truly nothing to hide, open the floodgates. Let anybody look at anything. Put it all online so you and I can go and read through the emails, the transcripts, and the memos. Let us all see it.
Now, if there are some things that are going to make sources and methods, you know, get out that we shouldn't, because that's obviously classified stuff in the name of national security, legitimately so, you know, if legitimately so, then you can have your closed door sessions.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to put all that out into the public like a WikiLeaks idiot. You don't have to do that. But you can definitely put the stuff on the table, like we're saying, whether it's in front of everybody or in a closed-door session if needed. Let's just get this thing going.
There's no reason when you have a congressional committee. These are the top 525 people elected in the nation. We trust them. We elected them. They should be privy to almost anything. I mean, if they can't be trusted to shut their mouths and not come talk to Fox News afterward, well, maybe there's a problem.
Yeah. Well, there has been problems with just that type of thing, you know, the leaks. And.
But I don't think there's any security issue talking about Benghazi now. You know what I mean? We've had a problem. There's obviously a problem. Tell us the truth, what happened. If you made mistakes, just admit it, and we can judge you based on that. But the real crime here to me was the hiding of it. And Ben Rhodes in that email obviously said, do not talk about policy failure, let's blame this on a video. And that is the smoking gun. Whether you like it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, that's a smoking gun. There is no other name for it. It's exactly what it is.
And that genius Susan Rice, she's a national security advisor.
All right, we had something that I wanted to talk Keystone and natural gas, but since we're on foreign policy, we might as well stick with it and talk a little bit about the Nigeria incident. It came out this week that Boko Haram did not get put on a terror list by Hillary Clinton back in 2011, 2012, when she should have.
One of the most disgusting terror groups in the world.
Yeah, the most heinous.
Right.
And we've got Bill Hemmer talking to Colonel Ralph Peters. I want to get a clip of this in there. Derek, let's go with track five so people can hear this.
But now comes a new report that Hillary Clinton would not go after this group as Secretary of State, refusing to designate Boko Haram as a terror group. Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, Fox News strategic analyst, here to analyze that. And Colonel, good morning to
you. Good morning,
Bill. You go back in history. There was an appeal in 2011. There was another one in 2012. Why the resistance to put this group in that column? Yeah. Why?
Well, two very straightforward reasons. One, magic year, 2012, presidential election. Remember the administration's narrative? Al-Qaeda was defeated. Terrorism was all but vanquished from the world. And by designating Boko Haram a terrorist organization, you would have admitted, hey, you know, they're still growing crops out there. The second thing is the administration has always been queasy about the idea of Islamist terrorism. They still pretend that there's no Islam and Islamist terrorism. And Boko Haram, and you're not even reading much of this in the papers these days, Boko Haram is a radical Islamist group. It's the illiterate cousin of Al-Qaeda in Africa, and they have been for years burning Christians alive in churches and also slaughtering Muslims.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
the worst group. I don't think it's not new to me. I've heard of this group for years.
Sure.
It's not the first time they've been kidnapping young Christian girls and selling them and raping them and torturing them and killing them. They've been doing this for years, decades.
And you know, the 200 and just under 300 girls that were kidnapped, and now it's thought that they're being sold into marriage and being sex slaves. This is grabbing all the headlines right now with Boko Haram. But not only has this been going on with Boko Haram for years, but all over the Islamic world.
Yes.
This goes on in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. This goes on all the time, as it's the norm that this goes on. And you don't really hear that much about it. It's a travesty. It galls me that in the 21st century that these people that are supposedly human beings can act this way and think that they're the pious ones and that we're the evil ones.
Yeah, how are we the bad guys? How are we the infidels when we're not the ones chopping arms off people, torturing and raping young, sometimes 10, 11-year, forcing 11-year-old girls into marriage?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, and their mindset is that education for girls at any age is wrong, is evil. You know, they're burning schools down and throwing acid in the faces of these girls. And again, they're looked at as, well, it's just a cultural difference.
Yeah. Where are the feminists?
Where are they?
Right now.
Yeah. I thought this.
Where are the feminists standing up and saying, enough is enough. This is not the way mankind should be treating womankind anywhere on the planet.
Right. Where's the outrage? Instead, you hear about how, you know, they're always complaining and bitching about, well, women make 15% less than men.
Which is a falsehood as well.
Instead, we're talking about girls being raped and slaughtered and sold into marriage and taken, trafficked all over the world in the Islamic world, and you don't hear a damn thing.
Yeah. I mean, we hear more about Donald Sterling and his vile comments than we do about Muslims kidnapping and torturing and raping young girls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, good show.
Good show, my man.
Until next week, go to thedailydrift.com, get your stories, and send me comments, gary@thedailydrift.com. Let us know how we're doing, and if you come across stories like Drake does, we'll put them online for you. Take care.
Take care.